these chocolates were all prepared independently from us and packaged in such a way so that all we knew is that they were A, B, C, and D.
Okay.
And we didn't know which was which. So we got those A, B, C, Ds back. We distributed it among the 60 people, randomly assigned to each group. And now the instruction for each person was, for each day over the next 7 days, we want you to fill out at the end of the day this mood questionnaire. The questionnaire is a very standard thing used in medical research and sociology research to see how mood states change as a result of some sort of intervention.
Is it a long questionnaire?
This one is actually fairly short. It's 35 questions. They all have to do with adjectives that describe various kinds of feeling and mood states.
Huh.
And you'd answer each question on a scale from not at all to extremely.
Okay.
So it's a five-point scale. This is then broken down into subscales having to do with the degree of tension you feel and depression and anger and vigor, fatigue, and confusion. And then you can combine all of those into a single score for mood. So they're told in the evening of each day over 7 days, think about your day and fill out this mood scale. Now, the first 2 days, they just do that. They don't eat any chocolate, and we do that to provide a baseline. The third, fourth, and fifth day, at 10 a.m. and 3 p.m., they're asked to eat a half an ounce of chocolate.
What a great experiment, Dean.
Yeah, well, they liked it. And, of course, we chose 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. because that's when blood sugar tends to drop and people are sort of hungry anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So it wasn't difficult to get people to comply with the instructions.
And a couple ounces is, you know, an inch by two, something like that?
Well, a half an ounce in each case. So it was a total of 1 ounce of chocolate per day for each day, which is like a candy bar. It's not that much.
Okay.
But this particular chocolate, like any gourmet chocolate, is extremely rich. You know, it's very high cacao content. So we told people, don't chew these up and swallow them. Don't wolf them down. Take each one of these little tabs. Each tab is like the size of a button. And just let it melt in your mouth and be mindful of how wonderful it is.
Savor it.
Right. And, of course, they had no idea whether this was the treated or the non-treated chocolate, but it was still chocolate, so how could it go bad? So they did that for 3 days, and then the last 2 days of the week, they didn't eat chocolate, and they just recorded their mood. Now, the hypothesis was that there would be an increasing difference in their reported mood state for people who ate the intentional chocolate as compared to the people who ate the control chocolate.
Moods would be better. They'd be happier, more jovial.
More vigor. I mean, specifically what we were intending, more vigor, less fatigue, and a sense of well-being. Enhanced over the other chocolate. So so we did this. Then the overall analysis showed that there was a significant improvement in the people who were eating the treated chocolate, a 67% improvement in overall mood. And then we did another cut on the data. We had planned in advance that since we recruited a wide range of people, that if a person tended to eat 2 pounds of chocolate a day, then on average, then asking them to eat another ounce is not going to make much of an effect because it's kind of saturated with chocolate anyway.
Yeah, and that's too much anyway.
Well, but actually one person said that she ate, on average, 10 pounds of chocolate a week.
10 pounds? Well, she's going to be a diabetic if she kept that up.
She looked like she could have lost some weight, but who am I to tell how much chocolate you should eat?
Yeah.
So we divided the people into a group that ate less than the overall average amount. The overall average was 3.2 ounces of chocolate per week. So there turned out to be about 40 people who ate less than 3.2 averages, ounces per week.
All right.
And so we figured they would be more sensitive to this substance, since it was a combination of both the enjoyment of chocolate plus something else that we hypothesized. And in there, we got a much, much bigger effect. As I said, 67% overall. But in the people who only ate less than 3.2 ounces of chocolate, it was 10 times the effect. So their mood actually improved a huge amount. So actually, I was completely shocked at this result. I mean, the design is put into such a way that the double-blind nature of it and the randomized distribution of subjects and so on is designed specifically to get rid of any kind of bias that can
exactly.
creep in. And yet it showed up, and it's just mind-boggling to me. It's as close to magic, I think, as I've done any study yet.
What did you conclude by all this, then, with this?
Well, one thing that it suggests, well, first of all, it's a pilot study. So you don't want to revolutionize the world with a pilot study. We're going to have to do a much larger scale study to confirm it. But let's assume that the results that we saw at this point are real. I actually think that they are real. And one of the things it says is that what we know about nutrition is incomplete. Now, in some respects, that's not surprising to me, because my entire career has been essentially to say that what we know about factor X is not complete. The world is full of all kinds of interesting things, and science tends to carve out only certain areas that it studies. So this is now studying the possibility that one factor of nutrition is intention. And intention can influence the nature of food itself.
Can intention, Dean, influence food that's not good for you, or only food that is good for you?
Well, we're at the beginning of an entire new realm of experimentation. No one has done this before, as far
Nobody
as I can
knows.
Tell. So we don't know the answer to that. One of the reasons we use chocolate, by the way, besides the fact that it was available from the Hawaiian vintage plantation, and by the way, the owner of the plantation said that I could announce tonight for the listening audience that if you go to that website, that there is still some of the intentional chocolate left over from the experiment that you can buy if you want to.
I love it.
One of the reasons
just in time for Valentine's Day. Maybe.
Exactly. Although you'd probably be inclined to eat it yourself, I think.
That's true.
So chocolate is interesting because it what we were asking it to do, the intention that we were giving it, was pushing it in the direction that it normally does anyway. The main psychoactive ingredients in chocolate are caffeine and theobromine, both of which are stimulants. And one of the reasons people like chocolate is because it gives you a caffeine rush, and then theobromine gives you a much slower and longer rising rush. And it keeps you alert and makes you feel good. So we asked for the chocolate to do what it does best, but pushed it. What we don't know is if you can take, for example, a tomato, which you wouldn't normally associate with becoming energetic,
mm-hmm.
can we make a tomato become energetic? Well, maybe, but I think what I'd rather do is find out what a tomato does and push it in a direction that it wants to go anyway.
And also experiment, if you're ever going to do this, on genetically modified foods to see what happens to them.
Well, ultimately, where we want to go on this is, as I mentioned early on, that if we're going to have hundreds of millions of people who are starving to death, it would be really nice if we can come up with food that was a lot more energetically nutritious than what we're currently using.
Well, let's say a bowl of rice, for example. If you're able to increase that, the mere fact that that is so readily available, who knows what they can do with it?
That's right. And we're not talking about the amount. We're talking about not the amount of that's being eaten, but the actual energetic effect of it. So if it turns out that you could be completely satisfied and energetic with 2 tablespoons of rice, that would be great. I mean, there's a lot more food to hand out then.
Oh, that's phenomenal. And you would need how many people to meditate with the intention?
In this case, in one of the treatments was, oh, by the way, there are 3 different kinds of treatments we used. We used the shaman, 2 meditators,
right.
and the device. There's no significant difference in either 3 of those methods.
Okay, so you have data on that.
Right. So we're able to look at the difference. All 3 of them are significantly different than the control, but we don't see any strong differences. The trend is that the device that the 6 meditators were trying to impress their intention into the
right.
device, that gave a bigger result. But we don't know yet whether it's a significant result because there weren't enough people in that group.
I wonder if you can invent a device that doesn't need the human element to create the intent. What do you think?
Well, I think you need the human intent to begin with. But what we don't know yet about these devices is that if the device really can capture intention, then you can get the best meditators in the world and basically do the equivalent of a tape recording of their intention.
Put it on a CD.
Exactly.